Good afternoon and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday with myself, Nastasia Arendse. It's just gone 12 o'clock on the dot, and coming up on the show, we're going to be looking at the Oak Bay IDC story that came out yesterday. That's after Economic Development Minister Ibrahim Patel said that he'd like Oak Bay to pay back the money by midnight. And this comes as reports emerged earlier in the year that a Singapore-based company allegedly associated with the Guptas bought shares in Oak Bay using money lent to them by the Guptas. So we're going to be talking to Melody Donation, who is a corporate finance and ESG expert at Bravura, about what exactly this means, and she'll probably even take us through what happened. And then in a short while, we'll also check in on the markets and how they're trading thus far with Wayne McCurry from Ashburton Investments. All this is coming up. So as mentioned in the intro, the Industrial Development Corporation has given Gupta-owned Oak Bay Resources, well, it gave them until the end of yesterday to pay back the money, and an amount of about 293 million rand. This was after reports that emerged earlier in the year that a company based in Singapore allegedly associated with the Guptas bought shares in Oak Bay. And to talk to us about it is Melody Donation, who's the corporate finance and ESG expert at Bravura. Melanie, thank you so much for your time.
Afternoon, thanks for the invitation, Nastasia.
Great. So take me through exactly what happened here when Oak Bay listed back in November 2014.
Well, where to start? So Nastasia, when Oak Bay listed in 2014, one of the things that happened at that listing was the IDC took up shares in the listing to make up for outstanding loan payments that were due to them and hadn't been paid as yet at that point in time. And that those shares were taken up at a specific price at that point in time, around the 8 rand mark per share. And the IDC was informed that that is in fact at a discount to the actual market valuation of the company, which was over 8 billion rand on the basis of a Singaporean firm having bought shares for a price of 10 rand 8 cents at the time of the listing. It then turned out that that Singaporean firm was not an unrelated party and potentially had been funded by Gupta-related entities in order to make that or to apply for those shares at 10 rand 8 cents a share. It speaks to reason that at the time there was, in any event, an issue with the actual valuation of the Oak Bay listing. The independent expert that had been asked to produce a opinion on the value of the net asset values at that point in time, the Shiva Uranium Mine, got to a valuation of around 4.6 billion. So effectively what happened on listing is the net asset value of the company was 4.6 billion, but the company listed at a market capitalization of 8 billion, which is almost double the value, which effectively means that the shares, or the value that the IDC thought these shares could translate into, should they ever want to trade those shares or sell those shares, just wasn't there. The underlying value just simply had been manufactured.
But then also, I guess also on the downside, is that earlier in the year, Oak Bay Resources delisted, leaving the IDC with shares it can't sell.
Exactly right. So it was quite a shock to hear that the delisting had happened without, or not in the normal course. And in the normal course, of course, what would happen under the JSE listings requirements is the company would have to ask the shareholders' permission and provide them, or have a independent expert provide a fairness opinion in respect of an offer that would be made to those to those shareholders to purchase their shares. So by virtue of the company delisting without that process, there was no mechanism for the IDC to tender its shares. In any event, I shudder to think what an independent expert would have come up from a valuation perspective in respect of those shares in any event. and the RDC were left with the shares, which has put them in a position where they are today, which leaves them with no option but to tender back these shares in the hope of getting repayment of that outstanding capital and interest which was due to it and for which the shares were issued in the first place.
Yeah, but I suppose as well, working for the IDC, they've decided to change a stance. I think earlier in the year, around August, they decided to actually be transparent in terms of naming that the companies that they're borrowing money to. And this was after the allegations that came out about Oak Bay and the Singapore companies. But now that this is happening, what do we make of it as listeners? Do you reckon that Oak Bay could have the money to pay back? I don't think so.
That remains to be seen, Astasia. Unfortunately, I think the likelihood is high that the money is simply not there. We do know that IDC holds security on the bonds that were taken up over the Shiva uranium mine, but we also know that that mine in itself is problematic and has its own issues. And the IDC is a shareholder. The IDC is not a mining operator. So, yes, it remains to be seen, but unfortunately, I do think you're right. The likelihood is low of the money being there to repay the funds that have flowed.
All right, Melanie, thanks so much for your time and, basically taking us through what happened and breaking it down for us. That's Melanie Dineshan, who is a corporate finance and ESG expert at Bravura. Time now to check in on the markets with Wayne McCurry from Ashburton Investments. Wayne, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
So how are the markets trading thus far?
Yeah, look, I mean, the markets are sitting and they're waiting to see what happens with the credit rating agencies today. Look, I mean, the platinum shares are a bit stronger, but generally the market's in a little bit of a holding pattern. Banking shares are down a little bit, but it's truly waiting.
Yeah. So I saw yesterday Fitch decided to be, nice to us. I'm not sure if we might get the same kind of kindness from S&P and Moody's, but I suppose the market is anticipating one of them to downgrade us. But what's the impact on the markets, say, Monday morning? Because I'm assuming they're probably going to announce this later tonight.
Yes, they'll announce after close of the U.S. market. But today is a shorter trading day in the U.S. because yesterday was the holiday. So, in theory, and it's not confirmed, we should have it at 7:30, 8:00.
Yeah.
Right, but let's come back to your question. From the data I've seen, there's a 50% chance we're going to get one downgrade, and that's more than likely going to be S&P. But there's a very, very small chance, only about 15 or 20%, that we will get two downgrades. Now, The dangerous one is two downgrades. If we get one downgrade, quite frankly, nothing changes.
All right.
Because the market's expecting that.
Okay.
So it's only when we get two downgrades that and we go, for want of a better word, full junk status, that there's this forced selling that worries everyone.
Okay. So on the company side, just going back to the markets there, I see an update out of Liberty. What did you think of that one?
Well, look, there's good and bad in it. The bad is the actual underlying business for all the life companies, and maybe specifically for Liberty and MMI, is really tough. I mean, the retail business is struggling to grow new business volumes, to grow essentially what in actuarial terms is called the future net present value or future profitability of that business. They're really struggling. In Liberty's case, they've done quite well on the corporate side, and the asset management has done reasonably well. But the really good news is the equity market's gone up strongly in the last while, and that's very, very good for their fee position, for their net position. So the underlying business is doing quite poorly, but because the market has gone up, their overall position has improved. I'm not saying that it's good, but it certainly has improved over the last while. And then the last thing on Liberty specifically is they stated quite clearly that their capital position, in other words, the amount of money they've got in shareholders' funds or capital, is well above statutory levels and is also well above their sort of internal guideline of where they would want to be. And they state there that this essentially means they will meet all of their stakeholder obligations, which means they're going to pay, probably pay quite a nice dividend. So the share's up a little bit on that.
Right. And also what I noticed, I think it was yesterday, some analysts were a little concerned about the sudden drop in Chinese stocks. In fact, their stocks tumbled across the board. Is it a case where, you know, I've heard the story about how there is a micro lending market for you to be able to buy Chinese, to buy stocks in the Chinese market. Is it a sense where now everything is cooling down and probably that's why we saw Naspers go back slightly below 4,000?
Yes, I mean, Naspers has fallen, 400, 500, 600 odd rand, but it has had the most massive run, as we all know about. I mean, when it hit its peak a few days ago, it had doubled. It's gone from 2,000 rand to over 4,000 rand. But China specific, the Chinese authorities there who micromanage the whole economy, let alone the stock market, cracked down a little bit on credit extension because they were a little bit worried about potential bubbles and the potential overinflation of the market. Mm. And that sent the shares down quite steeply over the last 2 days. And Naspers is just following that because Naspers is 10 cent.
Yeah. You were talking with regards to Liberty that there's a bit of good and bad. And over the week, we saw companies also release results where there was, you know, good companies giving good numbers in the sense of Transaction Capital, for instance, where their earnings were up 20%. But you also had the poor results out of Netcare, for instance. Which one of those did you get to have a look at?
No, look, I looked at both of them. Transaction Capital, well, we don't own shares in either of them. Mm. But Transaction Capital is just essentially taxis are us. If you own a taxi, you go to them and they sort out every single thing that you could possibly need in your taxi business. And they're doing very, very well in that segment. They really are. So, you know, congratulations to them for a good set of results. Now, Netcare, very similar to, quite frankly, all the hospital groups. What's happening is the people who pay the hospitals, whether it's a government healthcare service or whether it's a medical aid or a private healthcare service, are just putting the squeeze on them. They're paying less for the procedures and they are covering fewer procedures. Now, this is happening whether you in Poland, whether you in Switzerland, whether you in the UK, it doesn't matter. You are under severe stress and strain there. And Netcare, as with all the other ones as well, SA operations are also taking a little bit of pressure here. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is, you know, you still got to have these medical procedures. Mm. So at some stage into the future, all the people in the UK and in Poland, etc., who are covered by their national health service will eventually have to take out private insurance over and above their government health scheme to cover themselves because the government just can't do it anymore. So over time, it's actually quite positive long-term growth prospects for these healthcare groups. But in the shorter term, you know, they're taking a lot of strain in their underlying investment. So a lot of them have written off vast amounts of money of the balance sheet valuation of these companies. So Netcare, you know, quite frankly, they're in the same boat as everyone else.
Mm. Just quickly, before I let you go, Sasol yesterday, you know, spoke about reviewing their assets into 2018. And the one thing they are, you know, going to stop investing in is GTL, which was a growth focus in the past. What did you think of that?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, they didn't, not much actually changed from their announcement. Mm. Okay, so they were thinking about building a massive gas-to-liquid plant in America, I think, and they've just shelved that project. So they haven't spent any money on it. And then they're selling off their Canadian assets. Look, I suppose their current investment in the U.S., a thing called Lake Charles Chemical Project, which is not a gas to liquids, but it's a massive chemical plant. I mean, they've taken such strain over that, and they've lost, quite frankly, an incredible amount of money in that project.
Yeah.
I think they could be a little bit gun-shy now. Just want to consolidate their base and just get back, I suppose, into the shareholders' good books by conserving cash and looking after their balance sheet and maybe paying back a bit to the shareholders via a bigger dividend. So they're just a little bit cautious. Now, I suppose the dilemma they sit in is at the current oil price of, call it $64, $65 a barrel, you can actually make money on the gas to liquids.
Okay. Yeah,
it's an economically profitable area, but obviously, as I said, they're a bit gun-shy. They just steering clear of any major capital projects for a little while.
All right, Wayne, thanks so much for your time. That's Wayne McCurry from Ashburton Investments. That's it from myself, Nastasia Arensa. Stay tuned later on for the SAFM Market Update with Warren Thompson.